little bit. Have you ever seen the state budget? You have. It's 525 pages, tiny print, very thick. Significantly shorter than anything that comes out of the federal government. $117 billion budget. The biggest thing that I want to touch on of our $117 billion budget, some things for pay raises for state employees, important for council to note, you know, other governmental entities around you receiving cost of living raises, and water projects for the whole state funded at $410 million. That's a small number out of a $117 billion budget for water projects being one of the most important things that affects administering a local government to only be $410 million. However, it's actually quite a lot of money, and it's a historical number. I think last year we were at $358 million, and the emphasis that the legislature is putting on taking care of the state's water and water quality is good, improving and replacing things that are starting to decay and have problems. The town requested three projects. We worked very diligently. We were able to get two projects funded. There's a third project that we did not, but that was not from lack of trying. We will continue to work on that project. But I do want to at least give some good news that a backup generator for the fire station and another backup generator, for off the top of my head, I can't remember where it goes, both of those items were funded. That was in part to the hard work by your delegation, Representative Tremont and Senator Wright, making sure that those projects were funded and them working with other legislators who are in charge of various pots of money to get those projects funded. So we want to make sure that we thank them, which I know the mayor does, but you all, each individually as well, when you see them, thank them for their hard work, what they're doing for your citizens. I always like to put a slide in and around what's happening in your area. So a couple things that were interesting. Daytona State College got some money for manufacturing talent pipeline. I think they actually got several pots of money for manufacturing, but there was one that was the largest. It was $1 million. FDOT has $28 million for road resurfacing. I don't have the specifics, but at least $28 million will be spent in Volusia County during the next fiscal year on resurfacing roads. And then finally, there was something interesting, $10 million for a fuel farm, which I didn't know much about when I saw it, but the town manager has a few more details if you're interested in that, but it's a multi-county project for refueling. I'm going to talk about legislation, and I'm going to, in the interest of time, try to be somewhat quick. As you saw in the news, there was a, I call it the homeless bill, that's not really the term for it, a public sleeping and camping bill. What this bill really does is there are local governments, bad actors who make decisions that now we have legislation for everybody, not the town of Ponce Inlet, for sure. However, other localities have gone ahead and said, and it may have been in response to people being all over the place, this is the area if you are going to sleep publicly or camp, this is the area where you're going to do that. And several local governments have done that, encouraging, in essence, more public sleeping and camping. And what the legislature did was they passed a bill that says, local government, if you're going to do that, here's what you have to do to do that. You have to go get a certification from the state to make this area public camping allowed. Has to have bathrooms. And then you have to ask all your businesses around you if this is okay. And if they're not happy with it, they can take action against the local government designating a certain area as sleeping or camping. That bill was already signed into law. You probably heard a lot about the affordable housing bill. Last year they passed, and this bill does not affect Ponce, I think, quite to the extent that it affects Orange County and other localities, but it was a large conversation. I wanted to touch on it. They made several tweaks to, at least they presented it as several tweaks to what they did last year with affordable housing. They preempted the floor area ratio on new developments. They changed the amount of, in a development, the amount of units that has to be affordable housing, because they don't all have to be affordable housing in order for the development to qualify for certain tax exemptions. They made some changes depending if that development's close to public transportation or not and how much parking is required. I can share more details if you'd like to see it, but that's it. I always like to talk about the tax package. I usually talk about it towards the end, but I put it right after affordable housing because there were many local governments that had some consternation with the affordable housing, Senate Bill 328, and the remedy that was provided by the legislature for that was actually put into the tax package. But the tax package they pass every year, fuel tax, property taxes, some significant changes to property taxes, some changes to if you have gas, certain natural gas systems on your house, you know, how those can be included in your ad valorem taxes or not, and then also for local governments to opt out of this affordable housing, live local for certain developments, but there's some criteria that you have to meet. You have to, there's a study done by the University of Florida on affordable housing every year. That study has to say that, well, there's more renter households in your area, or there's more rentals available than there are renter households. So based on that, you can opt out if you want. That's in the tax package and some other adjustments as well. Building permit legislation. This one gave me quite a bit of heartburn during the legislative session. Two bills. One has a lot to do with planned developments. 500 homes, probably not happening here in Ponce, making it easier and quicker for developers like, we did dub it the Lennar bill. We knew that was a stakeholder behind it, for those types of builders to get their permits faster and quicker and get those communities put together. Another bill, the one that's more impactful to Ponce Inlets, House Bill 267, and it significantly shortened some of the time frames that local governments have to issue or deny or conditionally deny building permits, at least do something with the building permits. Shortens those time frames based on the type of building that's being built, and limits the amount of time that you can, or the amount of times that you can go back and ask for more information on a building permit. I think Ponce Inlet, and talking with town manager, already does a really good job of issuing building permits. I mean, I think you guys have a plan that you can do some building permits in like 15 minutes. So again, Ponce Inlet's probably not the target of this legislation. I actually have heard some of the folks that may be the target, but still affects you and something to take a look at. Senate Bill 1628. So last year, Senate Bill 170, and I know the numbers off the top of my head, which I know probably means nothing to y'all, but it helps me kind of coordinate as I'm speaking. We passed a piece of legislation that says any ordinance this town adopts, you have to do a business impact statement and how it's going to affect your businesses before you adopt that ordinance. And if the person or entities around you are not happy with that ordinance because it negatively affects their business, it has to be a business stakeholder, they can take action against the town. Well, in that bill, we actually exempted any changes in the land development code. We didn't have to do that. So if you adopted an ordinance about masks, that was probably what it was targeted at, you had to do the business impact statement, not land development. This year, we passed Senate Bill, when I say we, not me, but the legislature, passed Senate Bill 1628, putting the land development code back into that act from last year. So now any changes to the land development code are subject to a potential action. You have to do the business impact statement as well with that. House Bill 479, this has been a conversation in the legislature for many years. Long story short, transportation impact fees, we here in Ponce may do some kind of development, potentially with Port Orange. You have to enter into an interlocal agreement and figure out who's charging what parts of impact fees, who's issuing what permits. Only the local government who's issuing the permits can actually take their portion of impact fees. It's to clean up. It sounds like potentially there was some double, I want to use the word taxing, double charging of impact fees in other localities. Vacation rentals, this is huge, but since Ponce Inlet adopted its ordinance before 2011, this bill does not affect Ponce Inlet in the way that it affects other localities, but I know the mayor worked diligently with the League of Cities and other towns to be a voice on that bill, but it did pass, and if you want any more information, I can give it to you, but it does not affect you in the way it affects others. Everybody's familiar with the PACE loan. You can get a PACE loan for, honestly, I don't remember what you can get a PACE loan for, but now you can also get it for any kind of wastewater and water upgrades that you do for your house that was previously ineligible. So if you do some kind of advanced septic tank or something like that. Cybersecurity incident liability, this bill, one positive step for some for local government administration. If you comply with some standards that are promulgated from the state, this town can be held harmless against cybersecurity attacks. So I'm sure town manager and staff will look into that, make sure the town is accredited and what needs to be done to be held harmless. Also provides a grant opportunity that was provided last year that the money was never spent for cybersecurity projects. So if we want to do something to upgrade the town's cybersecurity, there is a grant available for that. Property tax adjustments, legislature put on the ballot for this upcoming November. So now your property tax, you're exempt between like $50,000 and $75,000, except for your school taxes. Well, instead of between $50,000 and $75,000, now it will be between $50,000 and $75,000 adjusted for inflation automatically. So that between $50,000 and $75,000 will start growing if this is adopted in the fall. Florida retirement system, obviously the town of Ponce Inlet is on FRS. Which many municipalities are not on FRS, so it's actually a fewer amount, but Ponce Inlet is on FRS. Annual adjustments to FRS have got more expensive for the town this year, as it does every year. There was some significant FRS legislation that I was going to talk about probably towards the beginning of session. That all got axed towards the end of session. It just really became the standard bill that's passed every year. So the town can enter into certain contract agreements. We call them CCNAs, like Competitive Contractor Negotiation Act. I think once you're in those, and the town manager could probably explain this better than I can. You can do things up to a certain threshold. They've increased that from $4 million to $7.5 million, largely due to inflation, I think, without having to go out for competitive procurement once you're in those agreements. So that should help when you're doing certain projects, that increase. And then it will increase annually based on the CPI, where historically that threshold has been low for quite some time. Final bill that I'm going to touch on, the Department of Environmental Protection passes their big package every year. Usually what's in that greatly affects local governments. We have asked the local water management districts to work on increasing the use of reclaimed water. As we know, reclaimed water is great for watering grass and golf courses and all that kind of stuff. And then does some changes to where Department of Health regulates septic tanks now. It's going to transfer to DEP for the purposes of reviewing and approving new and advanced septic tank systems. Along with a few other things, make some changes to the Resilient Florida Grant, which is a great program, and it's broadened the amount of types of projects that you can go apply for that grant. So the Resilient Florida Grant, there's always like $20 million available for the whole state, which sounds like a very small amount of money, but also the scope on which you can apply for that grant is so narrow that I don't think all the money ever gets used, so we've broadened what is eligible for that grant. Last thing, some bills that didn't pass. Sovereign immunity. We've talked about that a lot. I really do anticipate that passing sometime soon. There was a government accountability bill out there that I think would have been very difficult to implement for local governments County commissioner term limits. These bills died, but I put them on there because I do anticipate them coming back in some form or fashion in future years. But that is my presentation, and any questions?
You know, before any questions, I want everyone to understand how incredibly helpful Andrew was for me during the legislative session, because we deal in information. And what would happen is that I would get, it wasn't a tip because it was public, but it was Andrew said, this is what just got filed, or you're going to have to write an email to this legislator. And also very instrumental during our appropriation process, because there were a couple of meetings that he suggested that I go to along with our manager that would be helpful during the process. There were certain chairs or certain subcommittees that I didn't even know had a hand in the whole process. So Andrew provided us with the information we needed as we went forward and was there every time I went up to Tallahassee and, you know, walked me through places and things, and I just want you all to know that. So, and thank you again, Andrew. It has been such a help for me and by extension to the town, so thank you.
You are welcome, and I learn a lot from you every time I spend time with you in Tallahassee. So,
No, thank you for saying that. Do we have any questions? There's no questions here.
I had a question.
Are there any? Yes.
I had a question, actually, if you don't mind. Andrew, so I noticed the bills that you went over, only two of those as of last week had been signed. Do you have any kind of feeling on maybe how some of these others might be going? I'm asking in particular about the vacation rental ordinance. I've heard there's opposition basically on all sides of that issue to that one. So just curious about that.
I can add to the two. The tax package was just signed this morning. The governor did that down in Fort Myers, I think, or somewhere down there. As far as vacation rentals goes, the governor publicly said that he was not really in favor of it. I did speak with a stakeholder, a very important stakeholder to that, last week, and that stakeholder said that they felt like it was 65, and I quote, 65%, 35% that it would get vetoed. But I have no idea as far as the timing. I will tell you that they send groups of bills over to the governor at one time to be acted on. Things like vacation rentals, they'll send just vacation rentals over. And as far as the budget goes, which I'm sure everybody would love to know, because we're right now, as as excited as I was to tell you about your projects that were funded, we are waiting to see what the governor does. And town manager and the mayor and Dan, we are working to communicate with the governor's office to build value in your projects as to why they should make it across the finish line. I was hoping the budget would be signed earlier, but there have been whispers of a special session in the next 3 weeks, and likely the governor would would not want the budget until after a special session.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that has any question for Andrew? This is a golden opportunity to ask anything you'd like. I see none. Andrew, I want to thank you so much for making the trip here.
Absolutely.
For preparing this PowerPoint and presentation for us. It was extremely helpful, and I look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are down to item 7, our consent agenda. There are 2 items on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull either item? Anyone in the audience? Okay, seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. We do not have any items under 8, no old new business. Under item 9, we do not have any public hearings or quasi-judicial matters. We are up to 10A, Ordinance 2024-02. It is a second reading granting a non-exclusive electric utility franchise to Florida Power and Light. I would ask our attorney to please read the ordinance by title only.
Ordinance number 2024-02, an ordinance of the Town Council of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, granting to Florida Power and Light Company, its successors and assigns, a non-exclusive electric utility franchise, imposing provisions and conditions relating thereto, providing for monthly payments to the Town of Ponce Inlet, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you very much. Mike?
Sure, I'll address this. Yeah, this is the second reading of this ordinance. It was approved by the council last month on first reading. There have been no changes to the ordinance since then, so staff is recommending approval.
Thank you, Mike. And I do know we have representatives. If anybody has any questions of FPL, we do have representatives here this afternoon. Does anyone have any questions here?
Good.
Anyone in the audience? Well, seeing none, then I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve proposed ordinance 2024-02, granting non-exclusive electricity utility franchise rights to the Florida Power and Light Company.
On second reading.
Second reading, yes.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Mayor Peritsky?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming, our FPL people. Thank you so much. We appreciate it and look forward to continue to work with you. Thank you. 11A, this is... Okay, 11A is Resolution 2024-08, authorizing a transfer of appropriations. I would ask that our attorney please read the ordinance by the resolution by title only, please.
Resolution number 2024-08, a resolution of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, authorizing a transfer of appropriations within the town's budget for fiscal year 2023 to 2024 and providing an effective date.
Thank you. Mike?
Sure. Yeah, this is a resolution relating to transfer of appropriations. It has to do with our septic to sewer project. So what the fund transfer would do is essentially allow us to have money to pay our consultants. This is per an interlocal agreement that was approved by this council last month and is actually going to the Port Orange City Council today. But it just says we have to have cash on hand to pay the consultants, after which we will get reimbursed. So that's really it.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Does anyone have any questions? You all understand? Yes. Anybody in the audience wish to ask a question or comment upon this agenda item? Okay, seeing none, is there a motion?
Me? Okay. I make a motion to approve the resolution that authorized the transfer of appropriations in the amount of $99,349. This transfer is intended to fund the task order for Meade and Hunt for the SAFHFI funding and bidding assistance as previously approved by the council.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Mayor Peretzky?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you very much. We are up to 11B, Resolution 2024-09, amending the Town Council's rules of order for conducting Town Council meetings. Ryan, would you please read the resolution for us by title only?
Resolution 2024-09, a resolution of the Town Council of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, amending Resolution 2024-02, governing the rules of order for conducting town council meetings, to remove the sunset provision for the meeting start time and the agenda order placement for citizens' participation, non-agenda items, providing for conflicting resolutions, providing for severability, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, the title of the resolution says it all. This is really the end of the trial period that the council approved back in January. What this resolution would do would strike out the sunset period, which ends this month. So if the council approves this, then we will keep our start time at 2 o'clock and the citizen participation at the beginning of the agenda. If not, it'll go back to the way it was, which was start time at 6 o'clock and citizen participation in the middle.
Thank you, Mike. Do we have any comments, discussion?
The only comment I like to make is that looking at attendance for the past three meetings that we've conducted this has been phenomenal. And again, Jane and I used to attend the council meetings all the time at night before I got on council, and there were about six or seven people that normally showed up, and that was about it. So thank you for the citizens showing up, and I really feel like the time change has benefited us.
Bill or Joe?
Oh, I'm in favor of this. I love the fact that we're doing this in the afternoon because, as you can see, we've at least doubled the audience, if not tripled it. So it's really working very, very well.
Thank you, Joe. Bill?
No, I'm good. Listen, I love the 2 o'clock.
Well, I want to say that I've received emails from people, and they're not writing to me about the 2 o'clock. They're writing about something else, and then the addition has often been, and I love the 2 o'clock time. That's what I've heard. I haven't heard anything but people being very happy with the time, and we sought larger engagement and participation. I think we have larger participation and engagement. I personally like the citizen participation at the beginning so that you can do your business here, and if you can stay, great. If you can't, at least you know you had your opportunity to be heard. So it sounds as if we're all in favor of it, but I would like to hear, is there anybody who would like to express their opinion or an opposing view? Is there anyone who wishes to speak on this? Well, then, seeing none, I will entertain a motion on this.
I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 2024-09 as presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Villanella?
Yes.
Councilmember White?
Yes.
Mayor Peretzky?
Yes.
Councilmember Milano?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Okay. Very good. Now, no old business, item 12, but 13A is the request for cost participation from the Harbor Village Golf and Yacht Club, CSA, regarding the reconstruction of its dune walkover. Mike?
Okay, back at the January meeting, the town council heard a request from Association President Rick Ray for the town to participate in a non-specified amount with a reconstruction of their dune walkover. This walkover was required by the original PUD development agreement for Harbor Village, with an extra condition that it be open to the residents and citizens of Ponce Inlet. So this is essentially a one-time request to the town to help in some way financially with the reconstruction, since it is open to the public. So there's not a specific amount that's requested. This is entirely at the council's discretion. What we have really tonight is a decision or an initial decision to whether this should be in the town's future budget, you know, going forward to next fiscal year. If the town council does decide to approve this, of course, we would finalize this. It would come back to the council in the form of, if the council so chooses, in the form of an agreement between the town and Harbor Village, setting conditions, how that would work, indemnification, that sort of thing. So you have with the packet a cost estimate that Harbor Village has provided in the approximately $91,950. For the sake of argument, you have to start somewhere, you know, in determining an amount. Staff looked at the relative population of Harbor Village relative to the town of the whole, and that's about 25%. So if the town wanted to contribute that much toward this reconstruction, it'd be almost $23,000. Of course, the amount is entirely within the discretion of the town council, whether that's a dollar amount or a percentage, likewise. You know, the town can, it's really up to you how you want to do that. Mr. Gray is here with Harbor Village. And then if you have any questions for him. Also, we did receive two emails from the public, residents of Harbor Village, and that has been provided to you in your packet.
Mike, thank you very much. Well, we'll start here with any questions or comments. Go ahead, Skip.
I was waiting my turn. Yes, and Michael, again, after this came before the council, at System Anticipation, I'm sure, several months ago, I went into Michael's office and I try to do my work and do my homework, and Michael pulled the original contracts and the agreements from, Lord knows, 87 sometime, 93, I'm sorry, to 93, there's some changes, 86 to 93. There were like four different sets of revisions that were made before everything was approved. One thing I did not see in here, Michael, and I probably missed it, but at the very beginning, why did the town require Harbor Village to dedicate part of the walkover to the town?
I mean, that's something that is done a lot of times in development agreements. I mean, I couldn't find anything in the minutes from that time either. There's no why, but, you know, these are negotiated agreements. It's kind of a give and take in that process, right, with the PUD.
I did something very similar
back in 2015 when it approved a development agreement for the Inland Harbor subdivision on the north side of Inland Harbor Road. You know, there's requests from each sides, and those get wrapped into the agreement. You know, beyond that, I couldn't tell you why that was done.
And again, I was making sure I didn't miss something when I went through and read, but. You know, I guess where I struggle a little bit is that they gave up part of their rights. They gave the town rights to utilize the walkover. I wish I knew what they got in return, if that makes sense. I mean, well, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
But. Right. Well, the return would be ensuring public access for everybody instead of just for Harbor Village residents. You know, so that was the agreement. I will say this also, it has been a long-term policy of this town to make sure developments do provide access to the water.
Okay.
That could have very well played into it.
And again, that's not a trick question I'm trying to ask. I'm trying to make sure I totally understand,
right,
you know, why
yeah,
things
well,
happen.
I'll give you another example. So, for example, Los Olas, that's a gated private subdivision with private streets. It has a beach walkover. That is currently not gated, but technically it is only available for Los Olas residents. I mean, they choose to not gate that, but that's entirely within their right to do so.
And two more questions. I know that the walkover, and this would probably be a question for these guys, but the walkover was rebuilt after the hurricane and the steps were currently there. I'll save the question for them, but the question would be, are those stairs going to be rebuilt? And the next question would be, will this be an ADA requirement? Because if the town is participating in this, would it be a requirement for them to make sure it's ADA required because we're sponsoring part of it?
I believe that may be a question for our town attorney.
Yes.
To answer. Yeah.
Yeah, so essentially what we would have here is public funds that are being used for a walkway that would be open to the public. So I have been looking at it. Generally speaking, if there are public funds used for something that is open to the public, then that would require ADA compliance.
Okay. Okay. And then, I'm sorry.
And I don't know if any of the bids, if they submitted bids for that or if they took that into consideration, but in any event, it should be be ADA compliant.
And that leads me into my last question. Per our town policy, ordinance, laws, we're required for three bids. I asked this question that night at the meeting before when this was presented to the council through citizen participation. Is there a requirement for the town to receive three bids?
No. No, it is their project. We've confirmed that with Cliff. It's their projects. It's really a question for us if the town wants to contribute money toward it.
Got it. Okay, I just want to make sure we're covered. Thank you.
Sure.
Is that it? Okay. Joe?
Just a clarification question. The linchpin in this for the town to use public funds would be the necessity of complying with ADA compliance, is correct? In other words, we would not be able to assist if it were not mandated that it be ADA compliant.
Yeah, I think there could be issues down the road if the town were to contribute public funding without ensuring that it was ADA compliant.
Okay.
One thing you could do is ask them to have a bid that's ADA compliant, and then revisit it, or you could sort of earmark some money with the condition that the walkway would be ADA compliant.
Okay. So the secondary question that I have for us to consider then is it appears as though the request does not include the escalated cost of mandating that it is ADA compliant. So that is... We need some additional details on that.
Well, if we look at percentages, 25%, we could look at a future time the amount of money that could come in. But ADA compliance would appear to be necessary if public funds are going to go in. An additional question is if we make an offer of money, are we automatically privy to how the project progresses, how the money is used, or is the money tendered and that's the end of our contribution?
I would think that the money would be tendered, but then there would also be an agreement in place where we could insert specific provisions like that. I believe what was also in the materials was mentioned, like an indemnification clause that would be required. So there are conditions that you'd be able to put into an agreement.
We would want, I believe, indemnification to be held harmless, and it's with the understanding that this concludes the responsibilities of the town, because there is a public benefit. There is a public benefit, and I did have a question, and perhaps this is for the applicants, but I would think that Loggerhead residents would use it and a couple of the townhouses that are a little bit north of the walkover, but I don't know who else uses it. But we'll ask the applicant that question if there's ever been, numbers used or anything like that. And, okay, Bill, I'm sorry.
I use it all the time. When I was doing my running,
that
was one of my shortcuts. I mean, when I was doing my 5-6 miles a day, that was one of the shortcuts if I didn't want to go all the way on Winter Haven. I don't remember why they decided to make it open to the public, what that was, but I remember back when it originally happened. And we, as citizens of Ponce Inlet, were thrilled because if you look at what's happening, and I'm going back now to 2000, 2004, and 5, and you look at what we have from Calumet all the way up to Old Carriage. Mm-hmm. We had, when Winter Haven Park, it became ADA compliant. Winter Haven Park is currently stairs, and the county has said it will become ADA compliant. We participated in one walkover, and that's the preserve. The preserve is ADA compliant, not currently, but we're in the funding of ADA compliant. Anything that we do, if you look at every single one of those all the way up, you got Glenview, Ocean View, Harbor Village, you got Winter Haven, North Turn, the Preserve, and Old Carriage. Right now, we participate in one, and that one is ADA compliant. The key to this whole thing, and this is my next part, let us say that Harbor Village decides to make it ADA compliant, and we decide to participate. If it gets destroyed in another hurricane, since we have participated, we would then be able to get federal funding the way we were getting for the preserve to make it ADA compliant. I thought that was an interesting thought. You see where I'm coming from? We get FEMA money.
Right.
Would we then, if this participated and it was ADA compliant, it got destroyed again, because whether the state of Florida will agree that we have climate change or not, as you notice, they're pulling every statement of climate change out of their entire records. So there's no such thing as climate change in the state of Florida, but FEMA still recognizes it. Would we be able to get FEMA money if that walkway was destroyed?
It's an excellent question, Bill.
Thank you.
I think we probably have some FEMA experts somewhere who will be able to answer that question.
And I'm old school. If something's there and I like using it, I want it to stay there, unless you can come up with something better. Well, right now, we don't have anything better from Ocean View all the way up to Winter Haven Park, other than that walkover. And that is a plus. But if we're going to participate, we know what we have to do to be safe in the long run, and that's the ADA compliant part. And then the question is, since we participated, do we now get, if it gets destroyed, which could very possibly happen in another hurricane, can we get FEMA money? Before I can say yes or no to either one of those things, I would need to have that answer.
Okay.
Kim, would you be able to speak to that? Our finance director may have some thoughts on that.
How to save a buck.
Good afternoon. Kim McCall, finance director. That would be something, honestly, we would have to research. I don't want to give you the incorrect information because we would not be the owner. So it's something we could definitely research and get back to you on.
All right. Well, that's what I figured we'd have to get back. But my thing is, if we participate, It has never been Harbor Village's walkover. It has been they agreed to do it so that they can have a branch off to their building, because remember, that building was originally supposed to be six stories high. And as you can tell, it didn't happen because of the suit that was applied against Link South. So, and they agreed to having it open. And as I said, until I lost my knee, that used to be one of my running paths to get through. So I care about it, but I want to make sure we do it right.
That's an excellent question. I'd be happy to research it for you.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Kim, could you answer, like, how that would play with insurance? It's my understanding, if the structure is insured first, you would get that, and then FEMA might cover whatever is left?
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Like with what happened in Ian, insurance paid $241,000. About $170,000 was for the walkway. So that has to be deducted first. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point.
And that would be the insurance policy from Harbor Village, correct? Not the insurance policy from the town.
Yeah, so it does get a little bit complicated when you start asking about that. Who has the insurance policy? Who owns the structure? Who gets the benefit?
But if we're contributing money and we relinquish all future obligations, that means if it's destroyed in a hurricane, that the money should all go back to Harbor Village, because they're going to be the ones who have to reconstruct it, because we've already done what we said we were going to do,
correct,
which is give them the money. So that's something else to think about, Bill. But I think that maybe if it's appropriate, I would appreciate the applicant, someone who wishes to speak on behalf of this, to please come up, because I think we have a few questions.
So, Mayor Prisky and Council, first of all, thank you for hearing us out with
this. Your names, both of you on the record.
Yeah, Rick Gray.
Thank you.
4670 Lynx Village Drive. I'm the president of the Harbor Village Association.
Jeff Wilner, 4670 Lynx Village Drive, vice president of the CSA.
Thank you. Okay.
And, we'd also like to thank Mike and Darren Lear for helping us out during this whole process. We appreciate that. A couple things. Mike went over a bunch of stuff that we were going to talk about, but I wanted to address the ADA issue a little bit, because we've been researching the ADA issue a lot, even before the hurricane. First of all, we know as a private entity, we're not required to have ADA for that. Be that as it may, we're still researching to see if that's something we could do. As we looked into that, we also found out at the time Winter Haven had a ramp, ADA ramp. That was within the distance that was okay, where we didn't need ADA because that ramp was close enough to our facility that that would not have been affected. As we looked into the engineering studies and everything, because of the seawall we had to put in and the height of our boardwalk going over that seawall, in order to do an ADA ramp for that, because of the steepness of the boardwalk that had to be that steep, we would have to do numerous switchbacks to have it be ADA compliant with the slope of that. And with the numbers that we needed, there's no way it was going to be within the specifications of FDEP for distance from the dunes. So we were basically told we might be able to get a waiver. It would be a long, long process to do it and probably wouldn't happen. So when we're talking ADA, I understand the responsibility you guys have, but we have looked at it, and it really, the way our setup is, does not look like we have a very high success rate of trying to get an ADA ramp in there. And I don't know if that affects what you're doing there, but we have looked at that, and it's just not going to work.
And let me ask this question to our attorney then. When you approached this, Rick, you approached it from the Harbor Village side. If it's the town of Ponce Inlet municipality being involved, would it change the outlook from DEP as far as that process, since it's a town and an entity trying to support and go along with? Does that make sense where I'm going with that?
Yeah, it shouldn't, but I'm not 100% certain on that, so I can research that.
And or as I say, because if we're required as a town to be ADA compliant, it seems to me if we do, since we're contributing part of the funds, we might be able to say, you know, we're the town, we're obligated to do ADA. Is there an opportunity there? That's my question.
So I think that we need to know from the outset, the first question is whether the town, if we give you even $1 towards the project, whether that changes the, you know, your project to have to be ADA compliant, and then you'd have to make the decision with all those switchbacks. But we can move on to other things because we want to discuss this further. That is, so legal question number one. The second thing is that I do wonder, do you have any idea how many people outside of Harbor Village the public uses it? Because I know they can't park there. They could bring their bicycles there, but
I don't see, to be honest with you, anyway, unless we keep somebody sitting there for a month asking people if they're citizens or not, or if they're Harbor Village residents, that we could know that. I mean, I can give you anecdotal evidence, under quiet times, granted, it's probably more Harbor Village residents than town residents. When you have things like the North Turn, the race, you know, the old car race, when you have spring break, during the summer. I can guarantee you we see a lot of people coming down that are not Harbridge Village residents. So I think that would vary on the time of the year and the event that's being held there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Agreed. The other thing that I would like to mention, Skip, you had a good point, and I think, Bill, you qualified it. When the agreement between Ponce Inlet and Harbor Village came to being in and around 1998, 1999, the reason why we agreed, or I should say the developer agreed, to take care of all of the issues with not only the build, but also the maintenance and the liability of the walkover was to allow us to tie in on the tee on the back of the beach club. Okay. With the ability to do that, that was the agreement for it, Skip. So that's the reason why it's there. So just clarification of that. The other thing clarified is that when we initiated the seawall and the build out of the seawall, and we were looking at a way of doing the stairs and doing it within permitted process, we were given a couple of basics. One was, if you change anything in here, the permitting process will go into a completely different category, and it could literally take you 6 months to a year longer. So we did the best we could in replacing the staircase by a much better one, i.e., with what Cove Points did, we enabled them to put a platform in the middle that allowed people to sit and rest if they needed to, and then go down the rest of the way. The whole idea of that came from the park at Ponce Inlet, which you guys did the exact same thing. That's where we got the idea.
Now, where are you at in the permitting process?
I'm sorry.
The permitting process.
This is one of the things we had to do, and this is what we talked to Mike about. Obviously, before we could start permitting anything, we needed a contractor.
Okay.
And so when we talked to Mike about the process, what's the best thing to do? And he said probably see if we can have it put in the budget for next year.
Okay.
Obviously, we wanted to get things started, so we asked if we get a contractor now after our vetting process and we get one, can we come back to you with to get a reimbursement or whatever? And they said yes. So as of right now, we do have the contractor. It's Cove Points, very good local contractor. Just look at our wall. You'll see how good they do. And they are starting the permitting process. We are also having hired an engineering survey firm to go over the entire boardwalk. And I might back up just a little bit and say one of the reasons we're looking at redoing the boardwalk is obviously the storm took off the stairs. So we knew we needed to have those replaced. In the process of doing that, looking at it, the contractor checked the entire boardwalk. And while it is safe at this time, he did notice after 20-some-odd years, big degradation in it. The posts are smaller than he would like them to be. He'd like to do 6x6 posts. So it will become, in the future, a safety issue. So we're leaning towards doing it now, get it over and done with it. And it's not only the public part. It's the private area that we have also. So we're doing the whole thing. Obviously, we're not coming to you for the private area.
Right.
We're just coming to you for the public area, which we've already put money into stairs, engineering, all that. So this is where we stand. The process has begun.
Okay.
So.
And the $91,000, if I read somewhere, they're only going to hold that price for a very short period of time, right?
That's
like
one of
really short.
That is one of the reasons, as we all know, with changing supplies and everything else, that's one of the reasons we had to jump on this now.
Right.
We had what we consider a very decent offer. And I might add also, we came to you guys with the $91,950. I need you to understand, and again, that is the public part of the boardwalk. But I need you to understand that that amount is what we still are wanting to do on the boardwalk. We've already put in money for stairs, for engineering, for, you know, permits, the whole bit, temporary set of stairs. We've actually, with this $91,950, are spending slightly over $134,000 on just the public portion of the boardwalk. So we thought, in the spirit of cooperation, and we all know everybody's money strapped, that we would just come to you using that $91,950 that we still have left to do, to try to get some cost participation from you for that.
And if I recall correctly, it was 50% of that number that you were seeking.
That's what, right. That's what
and
we asked.
What I'm wondering, and I want to talk to the council about it before I open everything to the public, there's a couple ways to proceed at this point. It's a, if we cannot make a contribution unless it's ADA approved, well, there's nothing further, I don't believe, for us to do unless there's some creative something I don't know about.
Right.
And you're telling us that, if I understand correctly, there's not going to be an ADA ramp. It just, it's not going to happen.
I mean, I won't say it's 100% it won't happen, but from all the information from the experts we're getting, it's a very, very low probability that we would get an ADA ramp accepted with the way our seawall and the height of the boardwalk is.
Okay, what I'd like to do is find out as rapidly as possible, ask our attorney to do a memo for us, is we certainly have the facts of this matter, which is the staff report. We have what they want. We have the proposed contract. And I think the question, the real issue, is whether we're able to move forward in any capacity without an ADA-compliant ramp. And hopefully we could do that quickly, but it doesn't mean we have to stop the conversation right now if we are able to move forward, because I don't want to waste your time. I understand that time is of the essence to some degree here. Would you like to talk further? Is this something we would like to do if we're able to do it?
I just have one question to clarify, if you will. Are you certain that the property in question here is, you own it as part of your CSA, or is it an easement in perpetuity?
No, it is an ownership issue. We
the
do
whole
own
the whole
the
strip
land.
Of it is.
We own
correct.
The whole strip. We pay taxes. We pay insurance on it,
and we
take care of the routine maintenance.
True.
So
we would need to know
also,
that.
So Joe, we've had to reinforce it on many occasions. We've replaced many of the bottom boards to the walkover as we've needed to do that, and we continue to do that on a daily basis.
Understand.
And I'm good with moving forward as long as we get our determination on the ADA, because if we're not allowed to do that on our side, you know, we're trying, but.
And we have a recommendation by staff, and we can talk about it further, of a percentage with a cost participation amount of $22,987. I am not comfortable with a percentage. I'm comfortable with the greater of a number and a cap,
yes,
like 25%, but I'm not comfortable with just a percentage.
I agree.
You agree?
Yep.
Okay. Bill? All right. Without talking,
That
was your next point. Without talking numbers beyond what our staff is recommending and for the reasons that they're recommending it, what I would like to do is open this up, if it's okay with you gentlemen, to the public for questions, unless there's anything more you would like to say in this moment before I do that.
Probably the only thing that I would bring up is the percentages. And it seems like you're going to disqualify and move towards what we were talking about in the first place, which is great. But based on the explanation that we received, that it would be 25% of the population. I'm not sure where that number came from. It might have been voting records. It might have been some other number. I'm not sure where that population came from, because we're 671 homeowners, and we average over two people. The current population of Ponce Inlet is somewhere around 3,400. So it's more than the 25% figure to begin with. But I don't think that should even really play a part in this, mm-hmm. because what we're looking at is the fact that the rest of the Ponce Inlet or the public are the ones that we're allowing to go over this access. And that's 75% if you want to use your 25-75.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I do understand, and that's why I was wondering if you had data on how many people actually use it, because there's no parking for people there.
Right.
And they do have Winter Haven for parking. They have what's the next one? Is it Ocean?
That's it.
But the parking.
You have parking at Ocean View. You got about 20 spaces at Ocean View. Your next parking lot is all the way down by Jerry's. Your next north parking lot is Winter Haven.
Winter Haven.
And the Preserve has got 5 spaces.
So I'm really wondering how many people, because that's why I said Loggerhead, I know, walks through, that's fine. You have those townhouses a little bit, yeah. Okay, well, so.
You also have a couple of condo buildings when they're walking up the street and they go, like Rick had mentioned earlier, during the parade, we noticed an immense number of people that were using the walk.
But where were they parking? You mean just walking through?
Walking.
Okay.
Walking to the
Understand.
Parade.
And Mayor, I agree with your comment because, you know, guys, understand, I got a lot of phone calls from people from Ocean Way or, you know, Rains or all the way down south, and they're like, why in the world are you going to use my tax money to pay for their walkover? And I explained to them, again, you put a percentage to it, but we do have citizens that utilize that.
Right.
But looking at our total residency, they don't. So it's the people in that geographic area that are utilizing it. So we have to be careful, and I agree with where Mayor's coming from. You know, we can look at percentages, but in my opinion, we put a cap on it, and that's what it is, as long as the ADA compliant issue is dealt with.
And I think that's the biggest key, because, you know, I look at Ponce Inlet as an entity. Like, I used to think of down the hatch as one entity. Now they split it up last month. But I look at it, and I've seen people over the years actually going with their stuff toward your area. Because think about it. All these people on the west side of Atlantic, they have just those avenues that I read to you to walk over. I can remember friends that live on Ocean Way. They have their two bicycles, and they have their carriers attached to the back of their bicycles, and they ride their bicycles to the spot, take their carrier, and bring it over to the other side. So people don't realize there is usage over the west side. Now, how many? I don't know. But, you know, I know I've been one of them for the 20 years that I've lived here. So, and I'm on the east side. So I'm thinking of all these. Think of all the people off of Glenview and Ocean Way. It's like Lois was saying on Loggerhead. I mean, you go north and you see an area where there's a cul-de-sac, and they have a walkway from the cul-de-sac over to the beach, because that's the only, instead of going all the way around. There are numbers of people on the west side that actually use it, but how many? Who knows? I know at Calumet, we now have golf carts that park on Atlantic. And then they take their stuff, and they don't take their stuff over the stairs. They go through my dunes that I'm trying to rebuild and crush them. They just did it again. So now I figured, right, I got the approval for riprap rock.
All right. So is it okay? What I'd like to do is open it up to the public. I see a few people, and what I'm going to do is ask you to come up to the podium, put your name and address on it, and have you gentlemen stand to the side while the question is up. Mr. Birch.
Charles Birch, 4670 Links Village Drive, Unit B702. I'm all in favor of you approving money to with the inclusion of an ADA ramp.
Wait, did you say you are in favor?
Yes,
or you're
I am.
Not? You're in favor if there's an ADA ramp?
Yes, and specifically okay. Because I live on the seventh floor. I have neighbors on the seventh floor that are wheelchair bound. They can't get to the beach. I have other neighbors in my building that have gait deviations. There are reasons why they can't get to the beach because of the walkover and the steps going down. You asked about people on the beach. I'm on that beach every day at 6:30 in the morning. I meet town council people.